from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life, some days are good and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work, both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
James Hamm.
Never made money.
James Hamm of the Insiders joins us. What's happening, Hammer?
Oh, not a whole lot. I'm ready for a nap. That's why I'm ready for a nap. I know you guys got a whole other hours and hours of radio show to go, but not me.
How was the camp yesterday, though, with DeMontis Sabonis?
It was good stuff. You know, it's if you've been to enough of these camps, you know, it depends on the player, like how much interaction they have with the kids and all that stuff. I thought early on you could tell Domas hadn't done a camp before, so he didn't really know where to go and how to like fit in. But then slowly he started to figure it out, and you know the kids just like glob onto him because he's so huge, and you know everyone's like looking up to him. And I know that there was this little girl who kept taking shots. Oh no! Seriously, no. For that? Come on! Come on! That's ridiculous.
Come on, will you guys be professionals and let this man talk?
That's just ridiculous. That's ridiculous.
I agree, James.
He's 6'11", man.
I agree.
Is he 6'11"? Remember, we thought he might have been. They had him listed at 6'10". And then somebody walked 6'10", up. He's like, he might be 6'9".
Come on.
I think he's a legit
6'11". Every time I'm next to Doma, I was like, yeah, wait, this dude's 6'11".
That's what I'm saying. I think it might have been you we were talking.
He's like, hey, 6'11". Maybe. I don't know. I don't know. He's a big dude, though, for sure.
Yeah. Either way, he's a big dude. Yeah. So anyway, there was a little girl who kept shooting hoops and couldn't make it up to the rim. And like I was waiting for him to like grab her and lift her up so she could like dunk or something. But instead he called for a pass and then dunked it. and the kids are all like cheering, and it was fun. You know, it was good to see him in a different element. And if you've seen him on the sidelines in pregame with his kids, he's like a doting father. He just absolutely loves to like play with the kids on the sidelines in pregame and stuff. So it was good to see him in his element. And then, you know, he talked to us, and I thought that most of what he said was really interesting.
Real quick, I was just thinking about something. Is this the first, how do I put this? Is this the most camp-worthy players the Kings have had in your time, James? What is this, like the fourth camp? Malik, Domas, Fox, I guess it's only three, but
it's a pretty good three to have.
Yeah. It feels like Keegan can do a camp if he wanted to.
Oh, he doesn't like to talk.
Yeah. All right, kids. That's true.
One per roster with these guys. They got three of them now.
Kyle and I talked about this earlier, and like, look, I think the like DeMarcus Cousins, for all of his faults, who, you know, he always put on a huge camp. And he paid for a bunch of kids from underprivileged communities to come in. he always had VSP out there to do, like, they did vision checks for the kids, and then he would pay for glasses for the kids if they needed glasses. I just, like, DeMarcus Cousins camp, he was always engaged. He was always there as part of the camp to, like, hang out with the kids. And it was usually, like, I think it was multiple days. So he's the one guy that I would, like, kind of circle and say, of all the players I've ever seen, he's the one that kind of figured it out, like, what it meant. But he also isn't a player that I would assume had an opportunity to go to camps as kids, where, you know, again, like Sabonis went to camps all the time when he was a kid, because his dad was an NBA player and stuff like that. So, I don't know. I thought it was cool to see, and you might be right. It might be like the collection of players might be more than what you would typically have. You know, again, like I remember, like Rudy Gay had a camp like 1 year. I think Isaiah Thomas did, Ben McLemore, but this is like a collection of players, probably the most like sort of camp worthy that kids are going to pay for to come out and see.
You had mentioned that he said some interesting things. What did he say that got your attention?
Yeah, I think the things that stood out, number one, was how surprised he was that Malik Monk came back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, I think that everyone was hopeful he would come back, but they all understood the reality. And if NBA players are known for one thing, like when you're around them, it's that they all want each other to get as much money as possible, like go get your bag type stuff. And so I think they expected him to get some offer that he couldn't refuse and to not be back. And so that was one. And again, Sabonis lobbied for him to go, you know, to come back. He wanted him back really badly. But at the end of the day, you know, you just don't know heading into summer. And I thought that was huge. I thought all of his stuff with DeMar DeRozan was really interesting. You know, he's been working out with DeMar for the last week, or he did for all of last week down in Southern California with Doug Christie, Leandro Barbosa, Kevin Herter made an appearance there. I think Boogie Ellis was there. So I think that's like just like sort of figuring each other out, getting to know each other, both on the court and off the court, is a really big deal early in sort of when you're forming a team. And so I thought that was interesting, and sort of his take on, you know, we've got to figure out how to like integrate him into our system, and we've got to figure out how to let him do what he does, because the skill he has is a Hall of Fame skill. And then I think the other piece that he kind of just threw out there was that before DeRozan signed, they were getting frustrated with not closing the deal, not getting some of the players that they thought they might get. And you could tell like there was like a level of frustration with the players that something wasn't happening. And so when they did get DeRozan, everyone was like, okay, now we feel better about this, which is a good thing.
And you talk about Domantas Sabonis going down working with DeMar DeRozan down in L.A. or whatever. He's been a guy that's been pretty galvanizing since he's been with the Sacramento Kings. Wasn't it last year where he had everybody out in Napa? Was it him and Kevin Herter at the – what were they at in Napa, the concert, the festival?
Yeah, was it the Blue Note? I don't. It wasn't Blue Note.
No.
It was the other one. But, yeah, I don't
it's what's the Coachella, one that they the go other to? One.
Yeah. Bottle Rock.
Bottle Rock. Yes, they were at Bottle Rock.
Yeah, that's it. Sean's always there. Yeah.
So I mean, yeah, like he's taken on that role of being the guy that brings people together and has always seemed to be reaching out to his teammates. And not that Fox could be doing the same thing just without any camera phones around, but we've seen that a lot with Sabonis since he got to Sacramento.
Yeah, he had sort of the inaugural, like, everyone come over and hang out at my house and we're going to go play basketball. This week, I believe it's this week, the team without coaches, without head coaches and stuff like that, I think they're going to San Diego, and they're going to have sort of like a summer meetup with everyone that can make it. And that's usually everybody. And so, that's something that's going on, I think, right now. Sean asked him specifically what day it was that they were going to have their sort of players only camp. And these are good things. Like, you need to meet up during, especially if you have new players, you need to meet up. You know, a lot happens in an off season. Players get, you know, their names are mentioned in trade rumors, players get traded, new players come in, you know, players, you know, have kids and, or, you know, they might have a girlfriend that they're together with that when you leave, and then when you come back at the end of summer, they're all, you know, they're onto something new. So I think that there's a lot that goes into, like, these guys hang out really intensely for like 6 or 7 months. And then there's this huge break where they're not around each other. So I think coming together is a good thing, and kind of breaking bread, getting on the same page, making sure you remember the skill set of the players that are around you before you launch into training camp, where the coaches are, you know, pushing you and telling you where to run and how much to run and, you know, all that stuff.
I think another topic of conversation was DeMar DeRozan, and obviously that acquisition for the Sacramento Kings, and how that works with Domas. And Domas, who hates talking, you know, said as quickly as possible, oh, it's going to be good for us, it's going to be good for him, it's going to be good for all of us. And we kind of broke those simple words from Domantas Sabonis down a little bit. But what do you think the pairing of Domas and DeMar actually looks like?
Oh, I think it's going to be exciting. I mean, I think they are going to be really versatile, and like offensively, they're going to be very good. I think that it's just different though, because there aren't a lot of players like DeMar DeRozan anymore. There's not a lot of guys who live in the mid range. You know, if a couple of years ago, it's like San Antonio had like every single one of the mid range guys. And I would like to see Fox get back to a little bit more mid range game. I'd like to see Keegan Murray have a little bit more mid-range game, and I don't think the Kings need to go like 100% where they're just like what the Spurs were a couple of years ago with DeRozan and like LaMarcus Aldridge and all that. But I do think that it could be a really interesting piece to who they are and how they play the game. I think we're still going to see a lot of DHOs. We're still going to the dribble handoff with Domantas, but you're going to see it from different angles, because that's kind of how he's got to learn to play with DeMar DeRozan. And like, I think that it should be a really good pairing, specifically because they're both great passers, and, you know, they're going to draw a lot of attention. Fox already draws a lot of attention, and whoever, we know it's Keegan, and then whoever else, they're going to be really, they'll have plenty of wide open looks because of all the attention that these other three are drawing. And so I'm kind of intrigued to see how they piece it all together and what it means, what it looks like. And again, I thought it was interesting that Sabonis talked about he has a Hall of Fame skill that he does. And I'm assuming that he means like the mid-range jumper. Mm-hmm. And that's just something that they know that they have to figure out how to play with him. And it's not just going to be like, look, the guy conforms to your system and he instantly does what Harrison Barnes did last year. That's just not the way it's going to go. I would like to see DeRozan get up to like 4.5, 5 3-point attempts per game, which would be a career high by a lot. Mm-hmm. But I think that that's a possibility, especially as you get older as a player, you need to find easier ways to get buckets. And sometimes sitting in the corner and being that guy who shoots a wide open look is a good thing for your career. And so I'd like to see, you know, him sort of morph into a guy. And I think last year he averaged like, I think it was 3.8 3-point attempts per game. Mm-hmm. If he could hit 5, it would really sort of alleviate any of the stress you have from him not being, from Harrison Barnes not being there anymore, and sort of his 3-point shooting in the corner.
Yeah, we talked about it a little bit earlier, and I just feel, you know, between the combination of DeMar DeRozan and Domantas Sabonis and De'Aaron Fox, there are going to be so many open looks for a guy like Keegan Murray. I mean, just wide open looks, or worst case scenario, one-on-one opportunities for him to be able to score. And I think it could lead to him having a pretty a pretty big season. Like, I don't think it'll be 20 points per game or nothing like that, but I could see his 3-point percentage going back up. I think it was you who talked about it. Last year, everything else went up percentage wise. The only thing that went down was the 3-point shooting. And I could see the same thing happening this year with the other categories, but that 3-point percentage getting back to, you know, low 40s the way it was his rookie season.
Yeah, what I like about Keegan and very specifically adding DeMar DeRozan is I think it gives you another year or two to truly develop him as an offensive player. Like defensively, I think he's going to come out and he's going to be even better than he was last year. And like, he's going to hang his hat on being like a top tier defensive wing. And I think people are going to notice that like right away. On the offensive end, I think he'll still be a lot of the 3-point shooting, you know, sit in the corner a little bit, come off the high DHO and kind of do what Herter does. But then like, how many opportunities does he get outside of that? And one of the, like the natural progressions of a player is they usually get better and better as a passer. And I think they're going to be able to kind of slow play that with him and let him be more of an offensive weapon, as opposed to like rushing him into being, you know, a creator for others, like just because they have so many other creators on this team. So I'm intrigued to see what it means for Keegan. I don't know. It's really tough to envision, you know, a guy like Fox averaging 25, 26, a guy like DeRozan averaging 20 to 22, a guy like Sabonis averaging 18 to 20, and then another guy averaging 18 to 20. And then on top of that, Malik Monk at 14, 15 a game. And then, you know, that's just a lot of points. And there, it's just really hard to see like that many points going around and the distribution of points. So we'll have to wait and see just how big of a step Keegan takes.
Is the biggest thing missing for Keegan right now his aggressiveness, or is it something else?
No, I think it is. Yeah. I mean, and I don't know. I mean, it's not like he's not aggressive at all. Mm-hmm. It's just, there are times where he takes a back seat. And like, look, they just added a dude who's never going to take a backseat to anybody. And so if you think you're going to get more shot opportunities just because, that's just not happening. You know, we watched Harrison Barnes just fade away last year and, you know, drop all the way down to like less than 9 shots per game, right? And Keegan needs to look at that as like a cautionary tale. Like, don't be that guy. Like, find your niche with this team. And, you know, like, the 5 starters aren't going to be on the court the whole time, but you need to make sure that when you are on the court, and especially when you're on the court without Fox, without DeMar DeRozan, that you're like an impact player. And I think he has that in him, but you know, we can only hope so much for a guy. He has to go out on the court and actually, you know, perform. And like, look, he's got to get stronger. He's got to build his endurance. I think part of his offensive woes last year, especially early in the season, his 3-point shooting problems, it really came down to the fact that he took such a step on the defensive end that all of a sudden they're like, oh, okay, well, if you're going to be that good defensively, we're going to need you to go guard Donovan Mitchell, and we're going to need you to chase Steph, and we're going to need you to guard Luka. And so you started taking away his legs. And so again, every summer you come back bigger, you come back stronger, you come back with a little bit of a new identity, especially in your first 3 or 4 seasons in the league. And I'm intrigued to see what he looks like and how he performs now that he's got a little more time and a little more freedom to be who he is on the court.
Yeah, I think that time when Malik Monk was out and it was really just Fox, Sabonis, and Keegan Murray for the scoring punch. You know, at the time, I know myself and Kyle, we would talk a lot about Kyle Madsen. We'd talk a lot about, I need, you know, about at least 18 field goal attempts of the game from Keegan Murray. And for the most part, during that time period, he answered that. I think he might have averaged at that time like 17 field goal attempts a game. And, you know, the hope is he learned from that experience, and maybe he won't get the same amount with DeMar DeRozan there and everything else like that. But the aggressiveness, you know, and understanding the moment, understanding like, all right, maybe Fox doesn't have it, or they're double teaming DeRozan a lot, and I'm going to be getting these open looks. Be ready to release it. Don't hesitate. Attack the basket. Get to the foul line. I think that's something he did a little bit more when Monk was out as well. So just having variances to his game. And I hope he learned and added those type of things from his game in that experience where he was relied on to be the offensive guy.
Yeah, I mean, I really do think that when we think of players going from year one to year two to year three, all that stuff, like your logical thought process is always that they got better at shooting, or they got stronger, they got bigger, or, you know, they were in the weight room building the legs and whatever that stuff. I think the mental approach to the game is as much a part of a player's growth as anything else. And so, again, that's where I think he takes a step. If he doesn't come in looking for his shot, if he doesn't every time he's given a wide open look, if he doesn't pull the trigger, then you do start to reassess who and what you are moving forward with him. And, you know, not that you're going to trade him or anything, but like, what does he look like in year 4 and 5 when, you know, again, DeRozan will be 36 or 37, and you're going to need him to be a top tier, you know, guy. And I really do think it all depends on how much he not only is empowered, but how much he takes to being empowered and accept that as like part of who he has to be as a player. And again, we just don't know if he's going to ever do that. And, you know, as of right now, it just means he's a really, really good two-way player. But if he's going to take that step to be like a $30 million a year player, he's going to have to add more and more to his game every year. And so I'm intrigued to see how it works out. And like, look, this is a big year. Like at the end of next summer, he'll be up for his rookie scale extension. And we have no idea what that's going to look like at this point. I don't know if he's a $20 million player, if he's a $25 million player, if he's a $32 million player. I don't know. And I don't think the Kings know either.
And that's kind of the tough thing about the position that he's in this year. Cause you are obviously you got Domas and De'Aaron. He was kind of meant to be like the third guy to take off. Then you had like the emergence of Malik Monk, but now the third person is clear. Mm-hmm. Like you have DeMar DeRozan on in the squad and it's, oh no, by the way, Keegan, we still need you to do all of that stuff because we're trying to take a step to being, despite what all of these projections say about 46, 47 wins, we're trying to take a step to being a 50-plus win team that makes playoff runs regularly. And acquisition of DeMar or not, like, you're a big part of that. And so it's such a – he's probably, you know, you could make the argument Kevin Herter's position's pretty awkward, but he's probably in the toughest spot this year because expectations for him are very high. However, we're putting a massive new piece into this lineup that you're going to have to figure out in real time.
Yeah, I mean, like, look, DeMar DeRozan shot 17 shots per game last year, and on top of that, he took almost 8 free throws attempts. So that's like, I don't know, 21, 22 shots per game, like the equivalent of.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoop.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's a lot of opportunity to just they did not have someone else doing that last year. Mm. I think what you did, you bought Keegan another year of development at a minimum. But I think you also, the fact that he didn't show you last season, he showed you that he was better, but he also didn't show you that this was going to be like a straight climb to the top. It may have changed sort of the trajectory of your summer and what type of player you went out and tried to add to go with him, right? So as opposed to going out and getting more of a defensive-minded guy, knowing that Keegan was going to put up 20-something points per game, you're still left with that, okay, is he going to hit 18 this year? Is he, you know, is he going to be a natural third scorer or fourth or second? And like what you said, they didn't wait around and find out. They went out and got the third best player on their team. And so now that's no longer a question between like Malik Monk and Keegan Murray. It's fully answered. It's mm-hmm. DeMar DeRozan. And so now you're wondering who's going to be the fourth best player. And I'm not sure that everyone is out there worrying about who's your fourth best player on a good team. Yeah. You're worried about, you know, like your rotation, is it strong after that? So it's a matter of like, who does he become? And what is the outline of the player at the end of this season that we see? Is a player that when, you know, you have injuries or anything else, it jumps right up to 25 points per game? Or is it a guy who's going to be more like, okay, I'm comfortable at 15, 16 points per game? Because that really does change how you attack, you know, the coming years.
We'll come back. We'll talk more with our insider from the insiders, James Hamm, here on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320. Sky River Casino, the place to be. Sky's the limit. If you're 21 and over at Sky River Casino, 2100. Slot machines, card games, everything you need. Of course, the home of the Humidor and SR Prime. Two of our favorites over there at Sky River Casino. James Hamm, the insider, another one of our favorites. The insiders, our insider, another one of our favorites here. Hammer, we talked about DeMar. We talked about De'Aaron. We talked about Domas. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Sean Cunningham for a second.
Oh.
Specifically Isaiah Thomas. We actually, you might not know this, we actually interpreted Sean's tweet about Isaiah Thomas differently and called Sean just out of the blue and asked, you know, if he could clarify this for us. And I know you guys had Sean on last week. What do you think about this Isaiah Thomas coming to work out? And do you think it's maybe a little more than meets the eye?
Oh, I don't know. You know, like I heard like a couple of guys rolled through on different days. So not like we heard that there was like these four players, right? Whether Lonnie Walker and Tony Bradley and Juan Toscano-Anderson and Isaiah Thomas, right? Mm-hmm. And I know like JTA and Tony Bradley came in and played pickup on Tuesday, and then Lonnie Walker came in on Wednesday and Thursday, and I think Isaiah Thomas came in on Thursday. So they just kind of like rolled through at different times and just hung out and got involved in the teams, which are, again, at this point, there are very specific rules about like how many players you can have on the court if a coach shows up and all that stuff. So guys can be like watching what's happening, but they can't be actually active and part of, like, coaches can't be part of what's happening during the off season. So again, you can have like one-on-one coaching. You can do small groups like 3-on-3 coaching, but if a certain amount, you get over a certain amount of players, a coach can't be involved on the court. So I don't know. I think it's a good thing that they're trying something different, that they're bringing in some veterans. And maybe one of these guys earns an invite to training camp or two of them, or maybe they don't. Like at this point, like I think it's pretty clear that they have, you know, 14 guys that I think that they're comfortable walking into the season with. And then, you know, maybe one roster spot that's up for grabs and one roster spot that they might not even, have a player in that roster spot opening the season. We're just going to have to wait and see sort of how they handle that. But I think it is good to bring in some veterans and you know, have them work with a bunch of young players and whether they're going to make the team or not, I don't think that that matters, or whether they're going to get a contract offer or not. At least you're doing your due diligence and looking at players around the league who may have something in the tank and may fit into what you're trying to do.
Do you think, like, we've kind of talked about this a couple of different times, but do you think if they are to add, you know, one player to that, to make a 15-man roster, they have a position in mind, or is it best player available? Like, if you just get the best guy, or would you pass up a point guard that you think could help you to go get, you know, a 3-and-D type guy, because you don't feel like you have that many of those?
Well, I just think it depends. Like, if you're looking at like a developmental guy, if you're like, okay, like, look, we're going to take a flyer on somebody, you know, like sort of what they've done with Kessler Edwards the last couple of years. Like, that might be one avenue. Another avenue would be, like, if you're going to compare, like, point guards and small forwards, you might not have a small forward or a power forward that can play at all that's available on the market, right? We talked last week about Nasir Little became available in the last couple of days. He's a guy I'd kick tires on. Like, if he wants to accept a minimum scale contract, I'd bring him in, because, like, why not? And if he doesn't work out, you can cut him. But if he does work out, maybe you find something in a 24-year-old who just kind of fell out of favor last year in Phoenix. But overall, that's kind of where I'm going, though. It's like, either you leave a roster spot open and you kind of use that roster spot throughout the season, which the Kings are not going to be able to do all that much because they're already up against the luxury tax. Or, you know, you leave that open, so if you make a 2-for-1 trade, you don't have to waive somebody type deal. But when they brought in Orlando Robinson and then gave Orlando Robinson a $500,000 guarantee, which is a pretty high guarantee. I mean, that's much higher than, like, they gave Nerlens Noel $300,000 last year. And
oh, we were so hyped off Nerlens Noel for
yeah,
like a day and a half.
They gave Nemias Keita like $250,000. So $500,000 is a lot. That means he's probably going to be on the roster until you get to January. And when you make the decision on whether you're keeping him or not is when that happens. So yeah, I think it's going to depend, because there's no reason in carrying a 15th guy just to carry a 15th guy if he can't help you in some way. Unless he's like really a development guy that you think, hey, we can stick him down in the G League and we can develop him really quickly. Or, you know, I don't know. Like, there's no reason, like, not to be, I love Isaiah Thomas. There's really no reason to bring in Isaiah Thomas. You already have 3 or 4 guys who can play the point guard position on this team. And Isaiah would be more like your 11th guy and push a couple of guys down. And that's okay. But again, he would still be behind De'Aaron Fox, who plays 35 minutes a game. And then, you know, Malik Monk, who's going to be your primary point guard off the bench. And then Jordan McLaughlin, who's the other guy that you brought in. He shot 45% from 3 last year. So, like, you already have the depth at that position, especially when Keon can play that position. And, yeah, you know.
Yeah, but Cole vibes, Jones, James. Vibes. Vibes.
I love the vibes. And I'm a huge Isaiah guy. I mean, he is the guy who went to city council meetings fighting for the Kings to stay in Sacramento during the 2012 relocation saga, 12-13. When they were trying to go move the team to his hometown in Seattle. Like, he's a good dude. But at the same time, like, are you just bringing him in so he can sit on the bench and maybe chat with the guys on occasion? I don't know.
Maybe we could have pizza guys instead of pizza guy. I heard Malik's getting his own box and pizza and everything.
That's going to be fire. I'm definitely going to cop the Malik Monk. The
pizza guys. Yeah.
Speaking of, real quick, did you guys, well, Damian didn't see it. Maybe James, you saw it. Cause,
I like,
you know,
your tone.
You blocked me on Twitter where I almost got fooled until I kind of looked close. I was like, oh, okay. But I thought Keegan was going crazy. Just, I don't know how to explain it, but if you go to my Twitter, this was, I think, Friday night. I was like, I know that ain't who I think it is.
At IMK. Oh, nope, that's not it.
No, that's not it no more. Don't listen to the 13th round. That's not what it is. But I said, Keegan Murray, is that what we doing out here? But, you know.
How far back? You tweet a lot. How far back do I have to scroll?
I think it was Saturday morning, Friday night, something like that.
See, I got Angel.
Is that who I think it is?
I got
two chains.
I got Floyd. I see Cisco. Do I need to keep scrolling?
Yeah. No, that
okay. All right.
No. All right. For a second,
I thought that was Kenny.
Kenny.
No, for a second, Jesus, I thought that was Keegan, man. I said, hold on, man. Hold on. He don't look like Keegan.
No.
He look like Keegan.
That does not look like Keegan Murray.
And the chains. I said, oh, snap. Keegan not playing with him this year.
You should have kept that to yourself. What's your line? I'll give you a 1.5 on that one. You're just saying that because he's light-skinned. He does not look like Keegan.
He didn't
Murray.
Look like Keegan for a
no,
quick second.
No, he does.
And then
not.
I kind of looked at it, and I was like, I don't think that's Keegan, but I couldn't
remember.
I'm
just glad
this
segment
said,
is about you and not about me. That's all I'm saying.
He said, bro, is that who I think it is with hoop earrings and two gold chains? No, Kenny. In fact, it's not.
I said, hold on, man. Hold on. And then I was like, I don't think that's Keegan. But I couldn't remember who it was. And then I was like, oh, that might be Orlando.
Had me
Robinson.
Thinking Keegan's alter ego had arrived.
It's not even Chris Murray, bro. Come on.
Shout out to Orlando Robinson, though. Shout out to him, man.
Colorist Kenny Caraway. Unbelievable.
Keegan Robinson.
You, that is kind of funny, though. You mentioned something a second ago, James. Could you elaborate on it a minute? You were talking about the roster spots. You said the Kings could have a roster spot open, but they're up against the luxury tax, so that's not likely. Could you explain that like a little bit more? Like, what do the two have to do with each other?
Okay, so the Kings are hard capped at $178 million. They are right around the luxury tax of like 172. Mm-hmm. So typically what would happen if let's say the Kings were at 166 million, right? They could use their 15th roster spot to take on a player from a team over the luxury tax, take on like a second round pick, and then waive that player and reopen the roster spot. It's what they did last year with Filip Petrušev, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they could do that. But when you start getting up against the luxury tax, it doesn't help you to do that. Like, you're going to pay more for whatever it is you're doing. So let's say they're at $171 million right now, and they take on a player. And again, remember, this year you can absorb a player using the mid-level or the biannual exception. They can't absorb a player using the entire mid-level exception because they're hard capped, but the biannual exception of 4.4 or 4.5 million, they could technically absorb a player into that spot, use the exception to get it, to get a player and either keep that player or do whatever. But again, now they're going to go over the luxury tax to do that. Mm-hmm. So typically when you're say 5, 6, 8, 10 million under the luxury tax, you can use that 15th roster spot to acquire players in a different way, to acquire assets. Mm-hmm. And that's what I would consider like the Filip Petrušev move. You took on Filip, but you waived him right afterwards and they gave you extra money to do that. So when you waived him, you made some money off that deal, all that stuff. That's kind of out the window now because you're up against luxury tax. Mm-hmm. And the last thing, like if you go over the luxury tax, you become a tax paying team. You no longer get a share of the taxpayer dollar. Hmm. So you don't, if you're right at that money. Yeah. If the Kings have some whopper of a deal where they're sending out, you know, $25 million in contract, but taking $28 million in contract back, and it's going to push them over the luxury tax, but this deal could make you a legitimate player, mm-hmm. a legitimate contender or something, then sure, you'd go by the luxury tax and you would pay that money. Because not only are you going to lose the $11 or $12 million that you get as a tax revenue team, but you're going to have to pay dollar for dollar every dollar you go over the luxury tax. So say you go over the luxury tax, $3 million, it's $3 million in salary, $3 million in luxury. That's $6 million. And you're not going to get the $11 or $12 million. So that deal could cost you upwards of $18 million, right? Mm-hmm. So that deal's got to be worth it. It's fully got to be worth it. Now, as a team where they're at with the tax and with the, you know, their salary for this season, they kind of have to tiptoe around. And like, look, the other thing I'd point out, two-way contracts, they're not considered, they're not part of your salary. So that 550 grand or whatever it is, they're not considered part of your salary. And so you can waive a two-way player and sign another two-way player, and it doesn't impact your salary. So I would say when we get to camp, there's a possibility that maybe Boogie Ellis does like fight his way onto a two-way. And then you got to make a decision with one of your other three two-ways, whether it's, what do they have? Two Joneses and like what, Isaac?
Colby Mason and...
No, Colby's on a regular contract. Mason Jones.
Who's the other Jones?
Isaiah. What do you have? Isaiah.
Mark.
What's that?
Jason. I'm just thinking of all the Joneses I know.
No, they have too many Joneses, though. No. What are their two-way contracts? Are the guys that played at Summer League, they had Isaac, I got it right here, Isaac Jones and Isaiah Crawford. So if Isaac Jones or Isaiah Crawford don't stand out, but Boogie Ellis does, you could always waive one of those guys and sign Boogie Ellis, convert his Exhibit 10 contract to a two-way contract and keep him on the team.
You brought up one of the Joneses that is pretty interesting, and he's not on a two-way, but do you think Colby Jones is in danger of not making this roster? I know he's got a regular contract or whatever. Does that kind of keep him safe in regards of making this roster? Because I look at somebody that, you know, I like his game, but it's become kind of a logjam real quick at that wing 3-and-D position. And, you know, if he's has a rough camp, if Boogie Ellis maybe outplays him in camp, you know, does he risk not being on the roster?
I don't think so. I don't know how much of his contract this year is guaranteed, but he's on that new the second round pick exception. So they have him locked up for up to 4 years. And it's at like a budget, and it's also really, really lightly guaranteed, especially in year 3 and 4. And that's just kind of the way it goes. Like, you have the ability to keep this guy, and then that keeps you all the way through his rookie scale. And then you could extend him and do stuff like that. Like, you'd have his bird rights. So I think they like Colby Jones. I don't think he stood out hardly at all, whether it was at, you know, the California Classic, maybe a little bit at Summer League, he was okay. But there was some real struggles there. I don't know where he fits into the grand scheme of things. But again, that's why you have a 15-man roster typically. And so the back end of your 15-man, you know, we can kind of put Orlando Robinson in there. You can put Colby there. And then, of course, you've got to carry Devin Carter on your roster the whole season. Mm-hmm. So that right there knocks your standard roster. If you only keep 14 players, it really knocks you down to like 11 players that are in your sort of rotation. And maybe Orlando Robinson is able to fight his way into that rotation. I don't know. Like, you'd have to beat Alex Len, and realistically, I think Trey Lyles for some of those minutes. Mm-hmm. But overall, like, I think that there's you need to be able to be flexible in that area, that 11 through 14, 15 on the roster. Mm-hmm. And the Kings don't need another player, in my opinion, who can't really like help you now. Right. I'd rather have a player who is more of like a 9, 10, 11, 12 than a guy who's going to be at the back end of my bench.
Is that where the true mastering of putting together a roster comes from? I mean, obviously you want your top four players, you want those guys, you know, you want your best guys to be really good. You want that group to take it to the promised land. You want your sixth and seventh man to be able to do major things for you. But when you're really trying to master a roster, is it creating that flexibility there with the 13th, 14th, and 15th spots that you can move off from as needed, get out of as quickly as possible, trade, do all of those different type of things with, and not do anything, you know, using a harsh word here, just not do anything dumb with those spots?
Yeah, maybe. But, you know, I think if you look at the way that, let's say, Denver, right, has used those spots, Denver did make a mistake with one of those spots. They paid oh man, it's not it. Najee, not Najee Marshall, Najee Harris. Oh no, Zeke and Najee. There we go. They paid him like if they gave him a 3-year $24 million or something. They gave him too much money. And with their salary cap situation, that's not what they can do. But what I like about what Denver does is they're able to bring along a Christian Brown. They're able to bring along a Watson and have them maybe be part of what they're doing. Like, if you're Mike Brown, you want like 9 really good players. And then you want like 2 or 3 guys that bring something different. So if you're having a bad night and you need to throw something at the kitchen sink, you know, you need a, like, that's the one area where it's like, okay, well, if you had an Isaiah Thomas, if everything went wrong and you had a couple of injuries and you got to some point in the season where it's like, okay, we're not playing well at all right now. I need someone to wake us up. Maybe that's where you could dig deep into your bag. My personal feeling is that the Kings often get to a point where they're at like 9 or 10 and then everything else is like, well, he's just not ready. And they don't have like some special skill that they can bring in off the bench. Even last year, you could say, well, JaVale McGee, like he at least fit what I would say is like a guy that, hey, we can throw him out there and see what he's got tonight and see if he can change the complexity of a game. But you don't have, I don't think Hessler was that guy. And I don't think Colby was that guy last year. And you had some other guys on the roster. You know, again, Petrušev was never that guy. Even when they brought in Jones late in the season, you know, maybe Mason Jones could be that guy here and there if you really wanted to try something. But they don't have someone who's solid. And that's where I think, you know, Mike Brown kind of was hoping for JTA, and he signed 2 10-day contracts last year. And if you saw, he signs 2 10-day contracts and then plays. And you're like, wait, why is he playing? It's like, well, because Mike trusted him. And they don't have a lot of those spots and those lot of players right now that you can do that with.
Trust is a big thing for Mike. Like, I think we started to see that. Like, we weren't really sure what we were looking for the first year. But last year, it felt like he was really trying to find guys that he trusts. And I think that you just named a perfect example right there. Like, oh, we could get through a few things here with this guy. Understandable. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people who are in hiring positions hire people that they know.
Right.
Because, like, I know this person could get the job for me. I know they don't have an ego about it. I know that they'll be able to make all of this work.
Yep.
And James makes
it all
work.
And they're not going to cause problems. Sorry.
Yeah. No, it's fine. I was just going to put over your work. James makes it all work. I know you guys did a live episode of the Kings Beat recently. Kings Beat is still jumping as we get closer to the season. I know you guys will be cranking out many more episodes and much more content, so make sure you're copped into that. Make sure you're subscribed on that YouTube channel or podcast, or become a premium subscriber over at the newsletter so you can be a part of the happy hours. And we'll step out, and we'll be here tomorrow.
That's right.
Beginning at 10 a.m.
Yeah.
With James and Kyle, the insiders, here on Sacramento Sports Leader, ESPN 1320.
Vamos, Yankees!
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoop.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots
of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the Free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.